Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. But this is a very special episode, isn't it, Stone?
It most certainly is. It is the PRSA Special Edition show. We'll learn more about what PRSA stands for. But first, let's introduce one of the folks that are with us today. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Elizabeth Salter McMillan. Hello, Miss Elizabeth.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about mission, purpose of PRSA.
Of course. And I'll go ahead and explain to you, PRSA stands for the Public Relations Society of America. It is a national professional organization for public relations practitioners. We do have local chapters, and so the ladies I have with me today are from the Georgia chapter of PRSA. I have Brandy Miner, who is the Director of Communications and Marketing for the Georgia Realtors, and I have Annette Filliette, which is Public Relations Director for the Boys and Girls Club of America.
Welcome.
Let me just tell you a touch more about PRSA Georgia. We are dedicated to developing and enriching the professional lives of Georgia PR professionals, which I believe is what brings us to you today.
So now, there's no Atlanta chapter. It's a statewide organization?
That is correct. All of Georgia.
Now, is that the way it is around the country?
It is for the most part, yes. And what enables us to, as a professional organization, reach people throughout the state is we do have a number of physical events where we bring professionals together to network, to interact, to learn.
Right.
But we do also have a number of online resources that are available to professionals throughout the state. So if they can't make it into Georgia, we have a number of people in Columbus and in Savannah.
Right. So most of the things are in Atlanta or the metro Atlanta area?
That is correct. Most of the physical events, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you've got an event coming up soon. When?
We do. It is our annual conference. It is the ninth year that we are doing that. And that is coming up May 9th.
May 9th. And anybody special going to appear there or speak there that we ought to know about?
A number of folks. I'm actually going to turn that over to Annette to answer.
All right. Talk to us, Miss Annette.
Well, again, thank you all for having us.
Yeah, delighted to have you.
Thanks. Yeah, we have quite a speaker lineup this year. We start off with our opening keynote, and that's for Mickey Nall of Ogilvy. And he's actually the past president of PRSA nationally.
National, uh-huh.
And he's going to talk about like the future of the PR industry,
right,
and his thoughts and so on. And then breakout sessions, and those are from everyone from media panels at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and the Atlanta Business Chronicle, brainstorming sessions with 22 Squared, a big agency in town, a metrics panel from Auto Trader about connecting with the community with the Atlanta Beltline and Chick-fil-A. I'll read down the rest of the list real quick because it is quite an awesome list. Doing award-winning PR in very small budgets, which is great for nonprofit and higher ed.
Sure.
That's with Spelman and all about developmental disabilities. We have an internal comm breakout with CARE, the international nonprofit. Executive visibility with Sally Williamson and Associates. And then what's really cool this year is we're featuring in the afternoon, instead of just the traditional breakout sessions, what we're calling the PRX Talks, which are kind of a la TED Talks.
Uh-huh.
And very similar to TED. And we're trying this out for the first time this year, so fingers crossed. But it's, 20 minutes in TED style. I think TED's actually 18 minutes, but we're 20. And it's back-to-back. And we have four PRX talk speakers, and that's some pretty big names. Coke, and then the AJC.
This is kind of a free-for-all. They can talk about whatever they want to?
Well, so Coke is talking about their specific campaign on helping the National Park System and their branding campaign there. The AJC with Anna Eisenhower in town is talking about slowing down to create smarter pitches. As you all know, you get pitched a lot.
A little bit.
And a lot of them are just blanket pitches that are just canned.
Really? You think they're not customized to me? I find that hard to believe.
We need to change that. So they're going to talk about how to change that. The next one is a really cool one. A few folks from HLN nationally about how they get pitches and do storytelling and use content across multiple channels.
Sure.
And then the last one is real great guy, Michael Devani of Scout Mob. And he's going to talk about compelling content across all his channels as well. Great entrepreneur, success story in Atlanta.
I think something that's pretty interesting to point out, and you heard from the variety of speakers and topics that we're going to have at the annual conference, we recognize that not all public relations professionals do the same thing or in the same industry or in the same size of organization.
Right.
So we're bringing hundreds of professionals together, and we are hitting on each of those pieces that interest them. But it's also important that you get ideas, you learn, you spark something when you hear what people outside of your particular area do. And so that's one of the reasons it's so important to have this diversity
right.
in the programming.
Now, Brandy, can you share a little bit about how PRSA works in your life here?
Well, as the communications and director for the 27,000 members of the Georgia Association of Realtors. We wear a lot of hats in the nonprofit world, so I'm going to be one of the people, in addition to being a co-chair of the event, that's going to benefit from the many facets of the speakers that we have, what they have to share, and those like me and like the ladies I'm in the room with now who have been in the industry for a little while. It is ever evolving. It's constantly growing. Our theme this year is create, connect, and converge. And it really focuses on content strategy, which has become, in an age of limitless platforms and messages, it's becoming a bit bigger issue to deal with year after year. Our theme is really based on something that we read out of the Altimeter Group, a white paper that they issued, the Converged Media Imperative, and it discussed how marketers must develop and scale expertise in owned and earned media to drive effectiveness, cultivate creative ideas, assess customer needs, cultivate influencers, develop reach, achieve authenticity, and to cut through the clutter, which kind of walking backwards sounds like a lot.
Now, are you finding that more and more organizations are creating and leveraging their own media platforms? And if so, how's that changing your role in the organization?
I'll take to speaking for myself, I've been with the Georgia Realtors for 13 years. When I came aboard, we had a magazine, and I used to print out press releases and put them in envelopes and put a stamp on them,
wow.
And that's how it's gone. Now, we still have the magazine, but it's both printed and online. Mm-hmm. We are involved in four social media channels. Mm-hmm. We have expanded our media relations program. We even do email blasts on a platform that we use. So my role has grown exponentially in the past 13 plus years. Every person in PR, and even not just in the past 13 years, but in the past 5 years. 5 years ago, I didn't have a Facebook page. Now we have four.
Wow.
So now you mentioned that some of the members are companies, but some of the members are also individuals. So what's the value proposition for a company to get involved with PRSA?
And actually, let me clarify. It's an individual who has a membership with PRSA, but it is often the organization that will help from a professional development standpoint fund that membership. Some professionals pay for it themselves. Others use it as part of their professional development.
So then the organization would just pay for the membership for the individual that's in PR in their company?
That is correct.
Go ahead.
Which would support, you know, they're trying to better themselves, enrich what they do.
But they must see a value back to the organization by having their employee involved.
Absolutely. And it's some of the things that Brandy started to discuss here. If you are hearing about new ways content is being developed, new ways that it's being executed from other organizations, you can bring those ideas back to your supervisor, to your work that you do. The folks that work with me, if they go out to a professional development opportunity, I say, great, sounds good. Please make sure you bring back two or three things that you can discuss mm-hmm. with the group or at least share with the group so that you learn, but we all learn.
Right.
And we all have an opportunity to see how that may impact or push our organization forward.
Can you give an example of something you learned from one of the PRSA events, any of you, that you were able to bring back and kind of become real in your own organization?
I'll jump in.
All right, Annette.
And one of the best, I think, we do monthly luncheons in addition to these huge...
To the large annual event.
Exactly. And then breakout special interest groups.
Uh-huh.
And one of the most amazing monthly luncheons I went to last year was a media panel. We do this every year. It's usually around the August timeframe. And it was a local media panel just of broadcasters.
Okay.
Everyone locally, WXIA, WSB to national.
Right.
It really, just to hear their perspectives on it, some of them were getting 5,000 pitches a day.
Mm.
And so...
It's hard to stand out, huh?
Completely. And a lot of them, they were
scented honest. Paper. That's the trick. Scented
FedEx.
Paper.
Put it in a FedEx box.
I do remember mailing press releases back in the day, actually. But, you know, and then not only just the sea of email, but also they don't really listen to their phone and their voicemail.
Well, they can't. I mean, if you're getting 5,000 a day, exactly. It's hard to, your whole day would be just spent culling through that.
Okay, completely. And so it was a lot of great tips and best practices of how to cut through that clutter. I think I learned basically that content is still king. If you have the right story, that still will prevail. But it's also relationship building. And it's also in the age of social media, it actually, the tides have turned, I would say, in working with journalists. A lot more of them are now saying, especially in the broadcast world, pitch us via Twitter, direct message us. Don't make it a huge cattle call, but talk to us directly through there in real time versus an email that just gets lost in our inbox.
Right, because a lot of times the reporter or whoever is the media person, they're on a deadline.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, they got a million things that they're juggling to get out, whatever they're trying to get out, and then you're one more, and they got to be able to discern, you know, how urgent can I deal with this tomorrow? I guess Twitter is the medium of choice nowadays. To communicate with journalists?
It is, and I think it's because you can reach out to them, you can direct message, but you can also retweet or share their information. Show it, so it shows interest, you're interested, you're following, you're reading, and it isn't always the, I'd like something, I'm going to pitch something,
right.
But
yeah.
It is truly, find your work interesting, I think this is worth sharing.
Well, I know like on our platform, and you and I are a little bit removed from it nowadays, but I know Karen and our team of bookers, they like to have a relationship like you're talking about, so they can reach out and say, hey, early July, we're going to have a series on small business finance, and it's more of a working relationship, and then you're both kind of helping craft, you know, the good guests and all that for that series. That's what our folks like to do.
Right, because the media, you know, we have 24/7. We got to fill slots, you know, every show, every day. So, you know, we need the help. So it has to kind of be symbiotic and that we all work together.
Exactly.
So what's your favorite part about this kind of work, Brandy?
I like the variety. I'm a jack of all trades, starting to master a few, but definitely not a complete master of none yet. Going back into the early days and in, with a journalism degree, I always saw myself as a magazine editor, and now I have been for 13 years. But it's interesting to watch the evolution of magazines to go online and even to see how it has evolved for me personally. I used to subscribe to 9 magazines a month. Now I subscribe to 2, and there's a stack of them on my bar. So it's good to be able to have to be in a position where, you know, you're not always having to go out and gauge what the public's thinking because you're the public. Annette's the public. Elizabeth is the public. You can see things on a larger scale. In regards to something we've learned recently, I just got back from a conference in North Carolina, and we were talking about ad value equivalency, which used to be the gold standard for measuring communications and public relations. And I saw a great presentation from a speaker from Bank of America who really goes across all platforms to value or to measure their various outreach. some things, such as online content, it's as simple as page views and hits. If you have Facebook's likes, your views, how many views you're getting. Other things, media relations, media volumes, you still kind of gauge cost versus impression, or cost into impression, but that was a very difficult above my head formula. Learned some, but in the world of metrics, I like where communications has gone these days and all of these easier metrics. I know that AV, again, was some people were very reluctant and are still reluctant to let that go as a measurement tactic. But having different metrics, what we've come up with in the past few years since, I guess, the 2010, the Barcelona principles, it really makes a business case for PR. I know PR can be very abstract to businesses.
Sure.
And it's invaluable once you understand the metrics, which we all still have to kind of learn to understand those as well so that we can educate our businesses and corporations that we're affiliated with. But once you do understand it, you really see how it is a pivotal piece of any successful business.
So now how do you, in regarding metrics, how do you kind of discern between just because you can measure something doesn't mean it's something that's worth measuring?
There is kind of that abstract capability, as we call it, seeing the needle move. You start seeing...
But what is the needle that's moving? Is it, like, for example, like clicks or likes? There's so many ways to game these online systems. I mean, you can hire for $100 a firm in India to click like until,
sure,
you know, day and night. And then you have you know, they said, I saw something about Twitter just the other day, 44% of Twitter accounts have never tweeted.
I can believe that.
You know, almost half.
I definitely get what you're saying about likes, and I think that is something that a lot of companies have learned the hard way on, who went out and bought all of these likes.
Right. They think, whoa, it's look, I got a million
sure
there, and then none of them are real. They're all robots, and, you know.
I think what's... Oh, I want to cut you off.
In reference to the needle moving...
But isn't that what you work from a strategic standpoint with your clients to decide what is the most important thing? Like with the Boys and Girls Club, what is the thing that really, really matters? Likes don't matter. You know, page views don't matter. You know, affecting kids matters, right? Dollars in to help kids matter. Like those are the metrics that really matter, isn't that right?
It's true. Well, and it's funny you mention that because I just left the tech industry for almost 10 years and went to nonprofit. This is my first nonprofit role at Boys and Girls Clubs. And one of the big things I was tasked with is I'm kind of a tech dork and I love data. And we just rolled out actually a huge metrics dashboard of all the things we, I mean, this is an organization nationally that's getting multiple media hits a day,
right,
huge social media presence. But to your point, Brandy mentioned Altimeter Group, and they've really kind of, in my opinion anyway, outlined great frameworks of how the industry is in measuring. And so looking at the converged media, it's a Venn diagram, but owned media, earned media, paid and donated media. And to your point, there's so many things of which you can measure. And it's working with your executives and your board of governors, in our case with Boys and Girls Clubs, and figuring out what are the ones, for instance, in Boys and Girls Club, ad value really matters. And it's an older KPI, but it still matters in trying to convert earned media relevancy into some dollar amount in the advertising space, essentially. And so we still measure that, but a lot of organizations do not. And that's just what we look for. In addition to our owned media has really increased over the years. We produce much more video content and social and so on and measure that as well.
But doesn't it have to translate into children being helped?
That's ultimately what it is, yes.
Right? So like, you know, does a million likes equal $50 to a kid? Like,
No. We would never be. The way at least Boys and Girls Clubs views the PR and communications department is everything external, any external media. It's hard to kind of make an equivalency of this media hit or this social post ultimately equated to a youth entering a Boys and Girls Club. That's a very loose and direct. There's many, you know, factors. It's hard to say, I heard this PSA on the radio, and so therefore, as a parent, I brought them there. But it still helps in all the efforts. We have other departments that work on internal communications and so on.
So, Elizabeth, Brandy mentioned a moment ago so many activities, so many hats that a public relations professional can wear, but there are specific subspecialties that there's professional development opportunities for, like, I don't know what the right term is, like crisis management. There's probably a whole curriculum around something like crisis management or nonprofit. Can you speak to that a little bit and a little bit more about the professional development side
Absolutely.
Of what you guys do?
Absolutely. And I think what's interesting, and this is a point worth mentioning, there are a number of public relations professionals out there whose title doesn't actually say public relations, but they are always looking at who's my key audience, how do they consume information, how can I tailor my information to them to impact, affect a change. And as a result, all industries, anyone who has a public, there's an opportunity to communicate with them. So some of the areas, some of the special interest groups that PRSA Georgia focuses on, we have healthcare. They speak a particular language in a particular way. They're also highly governed. So someone in that space needs to be aware of that. Nonprofits also face some challenges, sometimes regarding budget. So how do you do big things on a small budget? We also have a number of independent practitioners, independent counselors, folks who it's maybe just them or a few people, so they don't have the multiple resources that maybe I could walk down the hall and talk to five of my peers. And that's where an organization like PRSA Georgia is exceptionally helpful. That's probably one of our strongest, most vibrant special interest groups. We call them SIGs. Special interest groups is the independent counselors, because they can bounce ideas off of each other and they're in a similar situation. And then we also have a technology SIG, again, kind of speaking a different language. B2B is very different than
That's
B2C.
A different animal, right?
It is. It is. And folks don't think that. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't see a B2C idea and wonder how it can apply to your B2B world, but there definitely is not.
That's not a cut and paste.
It is not. It is not. And no, and I work in financial technology, and so we're selling to bank CEOs, credit union directors, so their media and information consumption habits are different from a college graduate.
Right.
They're different from myself.
Right. A grumpy cat may not get the attention you want from the...
I would enjoy it.
Right.
I would enjoy it, but no, it would not. So I think it's, but with that being said, there are enduring principles. There are enduring principles to communication that are important regardless. It's being ethical. It's being straightforward. It's
being transparent.
Correct. Being transparent. Again, it's also just good practices. You really shouldn't receive cut and paste pitches. You really shouldn't. I know that it happens.
We've never received one from Elizabeth. I want that on the record.
I got one just during the show.
Not from us, though.
Not from anybody at the table.
But there are those enduring principles that we can all hang our hats on. It is providing the right counsel to the right people. And something that public relations practitioners often struggle with is getting that voice at the executive table, getting that voice... Mm-hmm. Up at the leadership table. Many of us have that, which is tremendous. Others of us really, really need to push and push for that, because those are the folks who also need to understand communicating the right message. And in many times, it's their message. And it's great that we need to disseminate throughout the organization internally, but also externally.
I hadn't even thought about that internally. I want to ask about that in a moment, but I have a pretty good window into this side of things, like receiving the story, talking with people, asking them questions about the story. I'm interested to learn more from all three of you about the capture, because that must be a big part of your job or someone's, to go get the information from the constituency that you're serving, or from the execs, or from the all of you. I want to hear we'll start with you, Brandy. Talk a little bit about capturing the story before you try to share it through outlets like ours.
Well, I think for me, it's, I wouldn't say easy, but we have something that people are very interested in, both our members and the public, and it's monthly housing statistics in Georgia. Not only does it affect the livelihood of our members, it affects every person in this room, whether or not you own a home. It affects property values. If you're a renter, it's still the housing market still affects your rent. If houses are scarce like they are now, rent's going to go up. So we get monthly housing indicators, everything from days on market to median price, average sale price, percent of original price received at closing. So to have these numbers are wildly popular with both the media and our members. We allow our members to brand the content themselves. Of course, we teach them how to correctly use and interpret them. They're not month over, or they're not month over month, mm-hmm. like some people think they are. They're year over year. So that's one way that we have been lucky enough to be able to produce something that unilaterally everyone wants.
I think that's the secret, isn't it? Is to create content that everybody wants. It isn't just that you want. Right, you have to look at it kind of through the eyes of whoever the consumer is.
Exactly, and you know we have some great member benefits. There's a lot of value into being joining the Realtor Association. Not every person who gets their license is a realtor. That is one message that I repeat over.
That
and
one's
over.
Getting out because even I have seen that.
Well, there was a period where it seemed like everybody was a realtor.
Yes, not not every soda is a Coca-Cola, not every copier is a Xerox, and not every real estate professional is
every
a realtor.
Tennis team had a realtor on it. I thought, you know, in the city.
Yes, they probably do.
All right, but like Annette, for yours, your constituencies that you're serving are maybe a little less interested in as many stats. They're more interested in stories and things, so you must go about it a little differently, right?
Yeah, and to be honest, it was very much a changing of my mind shift going from tech.
Right, that was probably more stat,
youth
right?
development. Right. Yeah, very much so. I will say data is still relevant. I think in any industry, we know this. Brandy and Elizabeth definitely know this. It's industry agnostic. I mean, you need to validate your story of proof points.
Yeah, 97.4% of the time it
that
needs
is
to
true.
Be validated.
Yes.
Right, Elizabeth?
Exactly. But I will say, you know, with Boys and Girls Clubs, so just overview real quick, it's more than 4,000 clubs across the country.
Oh, wow.
We serve 4 million youth. And so what I do is there's three kind of pillars of youth development.
And just to be clear, you're with the national,
correct.
Right? You're not just with the Atlanta or Georgia.
Correct. We work with them. They're
right.
in our same building, but yes, they're great. But yeah, so there's kind of three pillars in youth development. There's academic success, there's healthy lifestyles, and there's good character and citizenship. With my background, I fall into academic success. So I work on tech and STEM education mm-hmm. and arts across for our kids nationally.
Right.
And so about to your point, Sarah, about capturing content, I have to work with clubs all around the country. And depending on the partnership that I'm working with, for instance, like Samsung on STEM education or the Wallace Foundation on arts, high quality arts, working with those local clubs and getting those, especially those individual youth stories of little Timmy,
yeah.
10 years old,
right.
and how it changed his life kind of stories. And then also working with our corporate partners and finding, you know, basically what's aligning our objectives. And so getting the youth stories, but then also what they're funding us for. To kind
right.
of, yeah.
Because without the Samsungs of the world, then it would be difficult for you to achieve your ultimate goal of helping more kids,
exactly.
right?
Exactly, yeah.
And Elizabeth, what kind of polish do you put on the stories you get, or is it mostly numbers in your world?
Well, what's really interesting, so I work with Fiserv, and we're mm-hmm. a global provider of technology solutions. And the way I translate it for people is wherever money exchanges hands, whether physically or virtually, we have a product or solution. So we have 21,000 associates, we have 14,500 clients, we have 700 products and solutions.
Man.
And I use the word solution specifically because you asked about capturing the story, and it isn't feature functionality. It isn't this certain online banking software does this one little piece after six or seven clicks. It's about what is the audience's problem? What is the problem they're trying to solve? What is the heartburn or heartache that they have now? And then maybe a little less negative, what is the opportunity that they're going for? What is it that they see is necessary for growth, survival in the future? And then going to a technology provider and saying, here's my problem. what is the solution? So when we're looking at capturing the story, we look at our subject matter experts. Again, I said 21,000 associates, so there are a few. There are a few banging around the building and worldwide. I think the biggest thing in our world, and Annette will probably shake her head in agreement when I say this, is these are a lot of really tech-savvy, super, super sharp, highly educated individuals, and it's about translating what they say to the audience so it makes sense. So a lot of what I do in my world is we like to achieve this internally. You know, we like to develop this thought leadership piece. We would like to we have a new product or service coming out. We'd really like to communicate that to the audience. We'd like to build awareness, and then we'd like to have people start purchasing it.
So what, like an audience, what's an example of the audience?
I would say influencers and decision makers at banks, credit unions,
so
billers.
You have to know that first. I guess all of you have to know that first. Who exactly is the audience? And the clearer you can get in who that is and defining that, then the clearer your messaging can be?
That's very true. And an exercise that we have been going through and continue to go through is the buyer persona.
Uh-huh.
And what's really interesting about that is it's not the buyer persona as I see it, as I, the salesperson, or I, the technology provider, see it, but it is what is the buyer persona as a result of interacting with and speaking with the actual buyer or potential buyer
or
someone we just won. You say that. You say that. But having an idea, knowing and having substantiated evidence that this is how they think, not only how they think, what else are they burdened with? What do they look to for information? I actually did a number of the buyer persona interviews myself a few months back.
So you're calling like bankers?
We were at a client conference, so I had a number of face-to-face, which is actually definitely a bit better. Better interaction.
Because that way you see body language. And
absolutely. Absolutely. And they get more comfortable with you as well because they see you in your body language.
So these are like executives that say, I'll spend time with you to tell you my persona?
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's great.
What are they getting out of that?
Well, it's a better understanding from us so that they receive better information, so that they receive better communication, and that they receive the support that they need. So, you know, it's not, I'm going to exaggerate, you know, it's not like 50, 60 emails is going to make a difference. It's, do we already have a relationship? Let's build it.
Deepen it, right?
Let's deepen it.
Right.
Very good point. Yep.
Now, in terms of channels and platforms to reach these folks, once you really get a good understanding of who they are and what would be valuable to them, I'm operating under the impression it's not like you have to take one strategy. It might make sense in some cases to take an umbrella approach and hit a big population of which they are clearly a subset. And in other times, it might be great just to rifle right in, and both are valid, right?
It's that convergence, right? Weren't you talking about that earlier, where there's multiple media outlets and you got to be able to kind of use all of them?
And I think what's really interesting, too, is it's the same core message, but you package it differently. So we might have a webinar, and in the technology world, the webinars are a very good way to reach influencers and decision makers. They can dedicate about 30 to 60 minutes, and they know they're going to take something away with them. But is there a white paper then, or a short blog that also pulls that same information that we then push through other channels?
Right.
So if someone couldn't attend, it's recorded, so if you need to go back and reference it. But it's a matter of slightly tailoring the information for the medium or the vehicle and then pushing it out. We don't need to have one idea and then just when it's done, you know, crumple it up and throw it away. I mean, that's not a good use of anyone's expertise or anyone's time.
So you want to repurpose it. That's kind of built into whatever you choose, however you're trying to get the message out.
Absolutely.
Is that true for all of you?
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of content strategy and why we're even focusing this annual conference on the topic, because it's all about knowing your objectives, the audiences, which content maps to that audience and when, and following up with the right messages depending on that audience stream.
And then giving them the content they need when they need it in the form they want it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's whether it's to help them make the decision or they're the influencer and they take it to their supervisor, and then what argument or supporting information goes with that.
I'm kind of intrigued with this idea of internal PR. It makes perfect sense to me, but it really, I don't guess it ever dawned on me until this conversation, but that can be every bit as important, if not more so, that you take care of the folks behind the wall, right? Communicate to them. Can you guys speak to that a little bit and maybe share something maybe you've done internally to bring that to life?
Well, one idea, I guess I, what comes to mind for me is with the Realtor Association, internal PR can also mean membership. You know, it has nothing to do with the public. And our advocacy efforts are our number one goal and mission, and that's to protect private property rights and to promote home ownership throughout Georgia. So in dealing with our governmental affairs team and onto the legislature, we take a big group down to the Capitol each year. We also take a big group to D.C. So we meet with both our local and federal officials, and we bring one message to them. And so it's very important to us to educate a lot of members, scores of members, probably over 200 go to D.C. each year with us, that we are here to talk about real estate and the issues that impact us so that we don't get inside of the office and start discussing other things that may be important to us. And they're very good about listening to that. And those are our core members. Now, going beyond that, that's about 200 to 300 people who are really involved in our political action committee. Going beyond that is the task of educating 27,000 members of what RPAC does, which is Realtors Political Action Committee, what RPAC does for them in their business, how we protect private property rights, how we make not easier to sell a home, but little things that legislation that has unintended consequences that the public's never aware of, but that can really impact them on their job. I think it was last year, bill was coming to the floor, and it was the unintended consequence that was happening was that some language in the bill was going to make the realtor liable for some outcome in the short sale process. I don't have the full information for that. But again, our lobbyists got in there and protected our members from being legally liable if something were to go astray in the short sale process. And the penalties for that could be jail time. So again, it is protecting their business in ways that, you know, you don't even think of.
That's a good example of you're a membership organization. Mm-hmm. That's a benefit mm-hmm. for all people in real estate, whether they're a member or not, right? But that's something that
it's also beneficial to consumers as well,
right? But and you're kind of watching their back,
exactly.
And you got to kind of. But it's not something that they necessarily saw or would see, and you got to spend some effort and time to communicate.
Yes.
This is one of our values. You didn't notice it happening, but it kind of helped you.
Exactly. Even reaching out beyond that to the consumer, several years ago, we engaged in a pretty heated eminent domain battle at the Capitol. And that, of course, helps our members do business, and that is something that affects everyone. In that case, I believe the state was going to take away a small flower shop down in McDonough and to produce a business for basically higher tax bracket in the area. So we got heavily involved in that battle. And as a result, Georgia has one of the toughest eminent domain laws in the country. So that is something that our members recognize. Everybody remembers the great eminent domain battle from back in the day. That's probably 8 or 9 years ago. And it was a great opportunity for us to express to the public what we do for them. So not only were our own members the audience for that, also the general public and the legislators. You know, they definitely heard from us that year, every year, actually.
So they're all here. All those constituencies are hearing directly from you, and it's incumbent upon you to inform your membership, but you also have to equip them to articulate it to their neighbor Stone in a way that is reasonably consistent with the core message. Well, it all sounds like a tall order.
That's good job security for all of you.
Now, Elizabeth, do you have some internal PR stuff going as well?
We do. We actually have a group that's dedicated to that, a handful of folks. I'm focused on external communications, but I can definitely, as someone who is communicated to, as part of internal communications, stress the importance of it. And I think it's so interesting. Some of it is just, it's so simple. It's communicate. You know, there are a number of times where we are so worried about the external audiences that maybe we don't remember, focus on, we got to let our folks inside know.
Right, know what's going on.
Or you're so intimately familiar with it that maybe you forget that, you know, the rest of the organization doesn't know. So I think it's a matter of communicating clearly. I think what's interesting, and it's very similar to the external audiences, is that we have some employees who sit at a desk all day with their email open. We have some employees that are in a warehouse who don't sit in front of an email all day. So how do you vary your communication vehicles and your message? You know, some are full-time employees, some are contract, you know, and making sure that the communication isn't too general or broad as or potentially misguided.
Right.
You know, you probably wouldn't want pitches that are not focused on business
right.
radio.
Right.
Just like as someone who sits in an office, I probably wouldn't want who's an FTE, I probably wouldn't need or want the correspondence of a contract employee. So it's just making sure that, one, you communicate, and then two, you communicate accurately. And I think something we don't do enough of, and maybe because we don't want to seem boastful, but building the pride internally, like just the work and the desire to do it and the playing taller and the going the extra mile that comes with feeling really good about your organization. Fiserv this year, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary. Fortune recognized us as one of the world's most admired companies. Those are great things. And there should be a lot of pride around that and communicating that internally.
So I have to ask you, Annette, volunteers, that's a different crowd altogether, right? Must present some marvelous opportunities, but maybe some unique challenges as well, communicating and capturing from that group. What's that like?
Yeah. Fortunately, it's not one facet of my role. So I don't deal with that specifically, but many colleagues do. And so we have, it's kind of twofold. We have our partners, their employees that volunteer very actively in our clubs around the country. And then we also have just local volunteers and usually that's coordinated at the local level. And then a lot of times nationally at national headquarters, we'll work with corporate kind of employee volunteers. And I can't speak too, you know, in depth about that because it's not my direct role, but there's
But you certainly see it, and you would see it if it wasn't being done well. And obviously it's being done well at your organization.
Many volunteers, yes.
So now getting back to the PRSA, is this one of those groups that if you're in public relations, you should be a member of? Like there's no real reason that you should not be a member of PRSA?
I would say absolutely. And I think it's if you want to continue to excel in your career, something interesting, even you know, when you come out of college, I mean, you haven't learned it all, right? You haven't learned everything.
And you can engage in college, right, PRSA?
You can, yes. There's a student association, PRSSA, and that is a very large organization, very similar. They have chapters, and in that case, it is a chapter specific to the college or university. And what's really great about that, actually, is that your local chapter, there needs to be a connection there. So you actually get a connection between the students and the professional organization. But, you know, we all have tools in our shed, and we try to use them as much as possible as PR professionals, but sometimes they sit and they maybe start to rust. And so having a professional organization, talking with peers, getting your memory jogged, being able to say, you know, I really haven't, I'm going to knock on wood for everybody, all the PR professionals in the room and listening right now, you know, I haven't had a crisis in 5 years. I haven't had a crisis ever,
right?
But I need to be prepared for it.
Right.
And so that's just one of those sessions or webinars or luncheons that I make sure I go to at least once a year just to knock a little rust off.
All right, before we wrap, let's make sure our listeners know where to go to learn more about this upcoming event, coordinates, home phone numbers, you know, all that stuff. No, I'm kidding, but at least maybe a website and an email or a Twitter coordinates.
PR professionals who are interested and industry affiliates can go to our website, PRSA Georgia's website at prsageorgia.com. Regular registration deadline.
And .org also.
.org. Or .org, sorry.
she was just testing.
Exactly. Let's make sure everybody's awake. Our regular registration deadline is April 21st. That's next Monday. Attendance fee is $165 for members and $215 for non-members. Our late registration deadline is Friday, April 25th. That fee would be $175 for members and $225 for non-members. The registration includes parking, continental breakfast, box lunch, and an amazing lineup of nearly 20 renowned speakers that run the gamut all across the public relations and communications industry.
Now, if a company would want to sponsor, there's still sponsor opportunities?
Absolutely.
And they should just go to the website?
Go to prsageorgia.org.
And you guys got a pretty active LinkedIn group as well? They can just go on LinkedIn, look up PRSA Georgia.
Correct. LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.
All right. Yes. Now, before we let you go, let's go around the room and give you each have day jobs. I want to give a website for each of your day jobs.
Absolutely. This is Elizabeth McMillan, and I'm Director of Content Strategy at Fiserv, and that is F-I-S-E-R-V. .com, and that impacts everybody, as I said, out there, whether they know it or not, if money is exchanging hands.
All right, Annette?
Again, this is Annette Filliott, PR Director at Boys and Girls Clubs of America, their national headquarters, and our website is bgca.org.
Brandy?
I'm Brandy Miner with the Georgia Realtors. Our website is www.garealtor.com.
Well, thank you all for being part of the show today.
Thank you so much.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.